Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on excitotoxins when we come back. You know, many of the lessons that you hear on this program are just a small part of my two-week school on courtroom strategy and procedure, and this school includes lessons ranging from what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you receive a complaint, a summons, or a citation. And you'll learn how to make a chronology of the names, dates, times, places, facts, the witnesses, and evidence, just like the police do. And you'll learn how to conduct a hearing, present evidence, cross-examine witnesses, ask questions, make opening and closing statements, enter exhibits into evidence, write motions, briefs, affidavits, and asseverations. And I don't just cover what goes on in the courtroom. You'll learn preliminary procedures, arraignments, bail setting, what papers to file, how to put exculpatory evidence into the record, how to present your legal and lawful positions, what issues are appealable, and how to preserve those appealable issues for appellate review. There are 28 essential elements to master in courtroom strategy and procedure, and you'll learn them all here at the law school in this class. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're talking about excitotoxins. It's actually a natural food element, glutamate. And they've synthesized it beginning back in 1909. It's a food additive that tastes real good. It's not the only excitotoxin. There's a number of others. They're all poison. They're all deadly poison. They don't kill you like arsenic or strychnine. What they do is they kill your brain cells one at a time over a long period of time until you develop diseases like Lou Gehrig's disease. It's called ALS. Or you develop Alzheimer's disease. Or you develop Parkinson's or some other neurologic disease, Huntington's disease and others. It's a god-awful hard way to die. It's a nasty poison. It's called a toxin. When you develop these symptoms, they say you've got a disease, and it's actually dis-ease. That means that you feel ill at ease. You're feeling poorly. And when you get these symptoms, they have a name for it. That'll always make you feel real good. You know, when you're feeling bad and you don't have a name for your ailment, that is really psychologically debilitating. But when somebody comes along and says, oh, I know what's wrong with you, Bob. You've got Parkinson's disease. Oh, thank God, John. I feel much better now that I know what's wrong with me. That's just as incurable. Nobody knows what to do about it. Well, I say nobody. The medical profession, they haven't got a clue. They don't know what causes it. They don't know how to cure it, but they've got a treatment. And the treatment's pretty expensive, doesn't work, and you die this god-awful, horrible death. So Dr. Blaylock comes on the scene. He picked up the baton where Dr. Olney, I think it's Orland, Olney, O-L-N-E-Y, Dr. John W. Olney left off back in 1968. This Dr. Olney picked up on this toxin. And he wrote about it. Now, Dr. Blaylock comes along and he says, well, let me add a little bit more to that. Let me tell you the rest of the story here. And as usual, it got into the food supply innocently enough. I mean, I don't think I would fault the FDA on letting it into the food supply. I told you that story last time. It got into the food supply after World War II. We discovered, you know, one of the secrets to the Japanese success in life, and that was their cooking. And their food tasted better. Their soldiers liked it better, and our soldiers liked it better. And so after World War II, our Army picked up on this Japanese ingredient, and then they included it in our mess rations, you know, for our troops. And then the big food companies, you know, Kraft and Pillsbury and those, they all picked up on it, and they could synthesize it now. They originally got it out of seaweed, and then they got to making it chemically. They take a lot of rotten vegetables and biomass, and they put it in sulfuric acid and boil it for a few hours. And then they neutralize it, and then there's a scum comes across the top. They take that brown scum off, and they beat it up real good, dry it, and then powder it, you know, and then they put it in bottles, and they sell it to you. They put it in your food, and it tastes real good. You'll love it in your barbecue sauce and in your Ovaltine. And there's almost all foods have these excitotoxins in them. Now, the excitotoxins are just too much of a good thing. It naturally occurs, and you need it. It's an amino acid, But if you get too much of it, and you can't get too much of it when you're just eating natural raw foods, if you're just eating seaweed or sea foods, you can't get too much of it. But if you synthesize this stuff, I mean, you put this stuff in there like cocaine, I mean, you could eat cocoa leaves until hell froze over, and you could never overdose on cocaine until you synthesize it down and you get the white powder, and then you can overdose on it and kill yourself. And that's what's happening here. We have simply synthesized this, and instead of buying this on the black market or from Joe, you know, the drug dealer, we've got the big manufacturers putting it in our food every day. We're just drugged up with this stuff all the time. And it's simply too much of a good thing until now it's killing us. And so the average guy says, well, you know, if they put it in the food, it must be good. Food and Drug Administration is, you know, they're working for us. And if you believe that, you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy. The Food and Drug Administration works for the major corporations. They're not working for Joe Sixpack. They're working for Pillsbury and Kraft. They're working for Merck and Pfizer. But they're not working for you, and they're not working for me. See, if they were working for you and I, they would be concerned about, well, what do these additives do to us? They kill us is what they do. And then the food manufacturers, they don't want to take it out of the food. Now that they've had it in there for 40 or 50 years, they sure as hell don't want to take it out. And they all know the story. I mean, there isn't anybody at Pillsbury that's in an executive position doesn't know the MSG story. Everybody at the Food and Drug Administration knows the story. Now, the average Joe Sixpack doesn't. There are millions of Americans that know this MSG story, and so the breaking news here is that they've got 26 products that they put into the food supply that contain MSG or aspartate, but they don't call it aspartate and they don't call it MSG. They call it caseinate, malt flavoring, or they'll call it by some other name, but they're not telling you what it really is. They can call it hydrolyzed plant protein, or sodium caseinate, or calcium caseinate, and you don't know, but that's MSG. All right, now, they went to the lawmakers, and they got the laws passed to enable them to deceive you. They do the same thing with honey. You know, you walk into the store, and you buy this honey, and you say to yourself, oh, look at this. It says right on the label, it says pure Sioux Bee honey, and they're not lying to you. It is. It's pure. It's 100% Sioux Bee honey. It's not 100% honey, but it's 100% Sioux Bee honey. And what the trick is that they can mix that by law with 49% corn syrup, 51% honey, and call that pure Sioux Bee honey because it's a trade name and it's copyrighted, or it's protected, patented. It's like Coca-Cola. You know, you can't use the name Coca-Cola. I can't use the name pure Sioux Bee honey. They can. And it doesn't have to be 100% honey. It can be 51% honey and 49% corn syrup, and they can still call it pure Sioux Bee honey. It's a lying deception is what it is. But, hey, listen, it's legal because they went to the legislators. God knows how much money they paid. Maybe it was bargain day at the legislature. But they get the laws passed. And they do it for the express purpose of deceiving us. These are wicked and evil people. You know, if I did that to you, what if I, you know, I sell schools. And so if I came on the air and I said, if you buy this school, it will cure your psoriasis. And, you know, you're sitting there saying, well, I got this bad case of psoriasis, and I don't have any need for the school, but I do have a need to cure my psoriasis. So I'm going to buy this school because Gordon says it cures psoriasis. You buy the school, and it doesn't cure your psoriasis. You'd call the attorney general. You'd be just mad as hell, wouldn't you? And rightfully so. You know, when you get lied to and defrauded like that, and all I did was steal your money. These people are not only lying to you and deceiving you and defrauding you, but they're killing you on top of it. And the tragic part of it is they know they're killing you. Now, if I was selling you a product that was harming you, you know, you'd get pretty angry. But for some reason, people don't get too angry with government. Oftentimes, when people come to school here, I'll ask the question when the time is right. I'll say, how many of you in here do business with the mafia or the Cosa Nostra? And people look at you like you're stupid, you know. What do you mean? I've had people say, what? What did you say? I said, and then I raise my voice and I say, how many of you people in here do business with the mafia or the Cosa Nostra in New York? And they look at you, no, we don't do that. I say, why? Well, because they're criminals. You know, in holy righteous indignation, they say, well, because they're criminals. Then I ask the question, well, how many of you do business with government? And again, people look at you like, you know, you're suffering from the terminal stupids. Well, of course we do business with government. You know, we get our business licenses and marriage licenses, birth certificates and driver's licenses and register our cars. Of course we do business with government. So how many of you are happy with the business transactions you do with government? Almost always they'll say, well, we're not very happy with them. You know, we're not happy with the Patriot Act, and we're not happy with the income tax and Social Security, and we're not happy with graft and corruption and payola, you know, that goes on with government and government officials. I say, well, if you wouldn't do business with a criminal organization called the mafia, why do you do business with a criminal organization called government? Then it kind of sinks in a little bit. They say, oh, yeah, that's right. The government is criminal, aren't they? Well, of course they're criminal. You know, you got an agency here called the Food and Drug Administration. There isn't anything in this Blalock book over here that isn't known and documented by the FDA. Blalock, Olney, and hundreds of scientists, doctors, professionals have testified before Congress and before the FDA and said, hey, look what this stuff does. Look what it does to rats and mice. Look what it does to humans. And they don't change the policy. They don't say, oh my God, we made a mistake. You know, if they came back and they said, oh my God, you know, we approved this stuff for the food supply. We thought it was good. In 48, we found out that it's bad. Let's take it out. I mean, it isn't something that takes a Rhodes Scholar. You know, it doesn't take a hell of a lot of intelligence. Hell, you know, dummies like me with IQs around 80 could figure that out, I think. You know, give us a little more time maybe, but we can figure that out. Now, they know that, and they know it full well, and they know it kills people by the millions. And nobody dies, you know, with a death certificate that says, old Joe died from excitotoxin poisoning. Hell no, Joe died from Parkinson's disease. Old Joe died from Alzheimer's. Which is one of the points, you know, that I'm making here. So that's the way you commit the perfect crime. Doctors bury their mistakes. Doctors aren't killing these people. Food manufacturers, FDA officials, congressmen and senators, the people who are in places of authority who know this and permit it to continue. Every one of them is guilty as hell. Now, you're mad at Hitler because he killed a bunch of people. Adolf Hitler never killed as many people as the Food and Drug Administration has here in the United States of America. I mean, he killed a bunch. He killed them by the millions. But here in the United States, just to give you a little illustration here, the Food and Drug Administration, they got a job, and they're supposed to protect us from bad doctors, bad drugs, bad food. That's their job. Now, about 2.5 million people a year die here in the United States. And honest to God, 2.5 million people need to die. You know, otherwise, we'd become overpopulated. But they don't need to die from Parkinson's disease. Now, what's wrong with dying of old age with your shoes off in bed at 110? I didn't think that was such a bad idea. And so we're dying from cancer, not because we don't have cures to cancer. Hell, there's 13 cures to cancer. And I turn on my TV, and there's always this parade, or this march, or there's this walk that's being staged, some kind of a public display of your disapproval of cancer and your approval of raising money for cancer research so we can find a cure to cancer. I don't know how many times I've done it here on the air, but I've documented 13 cures to cancer. Okay, let's suppose you go out on a march and you raise $100,000 and you give it to this guy and he finds a 14th cure to cancer. I'm sitting there saying, what the hell difference does that make? You got 13 cures now that you don't use, so what are you going to do with 14 cures that you don't use? Because the only people that use cancer cure is the medical associations. It's the medical doctors and the oncologists and the cancer specialists, and they won't use it because cancer is a $500 billion a year industry. It's a source of money. And that's where these excitotoxins are. I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar a year business. It makes your pork ribs taste real good, you know, when you put barbecue sauce on it and they lace it with MSG, to make it taste better. I don't deny that the stuff tastes good. I'm just sitting here saying you got a bunch of criminals here in government and in the medical profession that know that this stuff is killing you and they're not telling you. In fact, they go a step further and they hide it from you. Hide it. So, you know, when people go to a lot of expense to keep it off the label and to change the label and the ingredients so that you won't know what you're eating, so that you'll eat this stuff, and it's going to harm you. You know, these excitotoxins, they harm everybody that eats them. Me, you, everybody. And we're all eating them. Now, I've done a little something about it. I went to work, and I work real hard to avoid eating those foods or drinking those beverages that I know contain these excitotoxins. They slip them by me all the time. But, you know, if I was normally taking in 30 grams a day and I can cut that down to 15, you know, then I'm doing a big service to myself. If I could eliminate it, it would be better. But if I can just cut it in half, that's a big step in the right direction. In fact, Blaylock goes a step further. He says, you know, if you come down with the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, then you need to really get serious real fast and shut off all consumption of these excitotoxins. See, if you're just a normal run-of-the-mill guy, if you watch them and you stay away from them as much as possible, you could probably live your life fairly normally. Now, once you come down with Parkinson's, ALS, or Alzheimer's, you got to get off that poison immediately, totally, and get on a regimented diet that excludes those poisons. And then you got to work real hard to maintain what brain cells you got left, which is why I suggested in the last program, you know, I said, wouldn't it be better if you saved as many brain cells as you could for as long as possible, just in case there's an emergency and you might need all you got? Well, now, these excitotoxins are too much of a good thing. By the early 1940s, it was known that the human brain normally contained relatively large concentrations of the amino acid called glutamate, which at that time, in the early 1940s, was thought to act primarily as a brain fuel. And based upon this idea, in 1949, Dr. Weill Mallerby tested a group of mentally retarded children to see if glutamate would improve their mental capacity. Now, fortunately, as it turned out, the experiment was a failure. And I say this because had the experiments continued, greater injury to these children's brains would have eventually occurred. Well, then in 1957, two ophthalmology residents, Lucas and Newhouse, tested monosodium glutamate and aspartate on infant, suckling, and adult mice while studying a particular eye disorder. And what they found came as a complete surprise, because after completing the experiment, they sacrificed the animals. And they examined their tissues under the microscope. And of the animals that had been tested with monosodium glutamate, virtually all of the nerve cells in the inner layer of the animal's retinas, it's in their eyeballs, had been destroyed. And the worst damage occurred in the newborn mice, but even the adults showed significant injury. They also found that the amino acid aspartate caused similar, though less severe damage. Keep in mind that aspartate is one of the main ingredients in NutraSweet, the artificial sweetener. All right, so anytime you see artificial sweetener or you see low sugar, you know, you got to stay away from that stuff, you know, as much as possible. You know, like, you know, if you see it, don't buy it. And at some point in time, you know, if everybody did that, the big food manufacturers, they'd say, you know, I don't think people want to eat this stuff. I mean, that's one way to do it. It's the way I do it. I'm not writing any letters to my senator over here. Hell, Kit Bond's on the take just like all the rest of them. You know, he's probably a nice guy, but, you know, he's just like everybody else. He's got a green patch of lawn to mow, you know, every weekend. And he's got bills to pay. And, you know, when somebody comes along and says, gee, we'd like to have this law passed, and here's $100,000 for your campaign. I mean, they wouldn't give him a $100,000 bribe and say, here's the way we want you to vote. I mean, they're not crass, you know, about it. They're pretty subtle. And so they come along and they say, gee, Mr. Bond, we'd like to donate to your campaign. What's your stand on aspartame? Oh, God, I'm all in favor of aspartame. Oh, which that's what we were hoping. You know, we sell aspartame, and we'd like you to sponsor legislation, you know, Senate Bill 2204, which has been put out there by Senator so-and-so. And if you did that, you know, we'd probably donate to your campaign. And so Kit Bond, he goes in there and votes for it, and they send $100,000, and he gets reelected, and that's what he's in business for. Now, you've heard that story before. I'm not telling you something, you know, or telling you a tale out of school or telling you something you didn't know. Now, the tragedy of it is Kit Bond knows as much about this probably more than I do. I mean, he listened to the committee hearings. He's listened to people come in and testify to this stuff. And so for anybody, you know, to vote to put this into your food, no matter how much money you pay him, has got to be a criminal. He's got to be worse than an ordinary criminal. You know, ordinary criminals, they steal your money. This is an extraordinary criminal. This guy not only steals your money, but he does it in such a way that he kills you in the process and makes himself look like he's a hero. It's diabolical. Now, unfortunately, this important finding went virtually unnoticed by the medical world and especially by the food industry, which at the time was adding tons of MSG to foods, including baby food. Now, you know, here's your baby. And you're feeding him baby food and you're feeding him MSG. It screws up his brain. He develops ADD. Later in life, he'll come down with Alzheimer's disease or something else. And you know, as a parent, you're probably sitting there saying, well, I think I'm doing the right thing by buying this real good stuff. See, you people are real concerned about fly legs and contaminants in the baby food. If you open a can of baby food or a jar of baby food and inside there was a, you know, let's say there's a beetle in there. My God, you people would puke. You'd call the police. You'd have the company. You'd sue them. You'd just raise hell with them if they had a beetle in there. Hell, that beetle ain't gonna hurt your kid. If he ate it, it wouldn't hurt him. But here's this industry over here putting the toxic waste in your kid's food. You feed it to him and you love it. Some of you even know that it's poison and don't take action. But there's no such thing now as, you know, as an act or a decision without repercussions. Everything we do in life, you know, has a repercussion to it. You park your car and you ask yourself, well, should I put a quarter in the meter or not? And so you say, I'm going to run in there. I'll be back in 2 minutes. You run into the post office to get the mail. There's a longer line than you anticipated. And so it takes you 15 minutes to get your mail and to get out of the post office. And you get out there and there's a damn ticket on your car. That's going to cost you $20. Well, you know, you got a choice. You can put the quarter in and you know, 90% of the time you don't get caught, and so you save a quarter. But this time, you got caught. It cost you $20. Okay, well, you made a decision, and there is an outcome that comes from it. Same thing's true here. You know, you make decisions every day about the food you eat and the things and the lifestyle you want to live, and of course, it has repercussions later on. So, you know, yesterday I said, you know, when you come down with Alzheimer's disease, you know, remember where you heard it first. You know, so, before you get Alzheimer's disease, let me tell you, I told you here, I told you where the information is located, and I told you that there's a bad thing happening to you. And so, this is Dr. John W. Olney now, comes up. This baby food. It wasn't until 10 years later that someone saw the importance of this discovery. And that person was a neuroscientist by the name of John W. Olney. So back in 1957, these two ophthalmology residents, Lucas and Newhouse, stumbled across a very important finding concerning these neurotoxins. And from 1948, when they started using them, until 57, you know, we could say, hey, listen, it looked like a good thing. The Japs were using it for years. Then in 57, this discovery came up. The FDA should have been alerted instantly. They should have started testing and finding out, hey, what's going on here with this product? And then they should have banned it. And that's what any intelligent person would have done. Now, these people are very intelligent, but they're very diabolical, and they're very wicked, and they're very evil. People who leave these poisons in your food, in your baby foods, in anybody's food, that produces a disease like Alzheimer's disease is much worse than Adolf Hitler. I don't ever remember any stories about Hitler torturing people to death. I imagine it went on, but I think it was pretty isolated if it was. The people that they were killing in those concentration camps, they had a very efficient program going. They were killing these people just as fast as possible. I mean, they were killing, you know, hundreds of them a day. And they were disposing of the bodies very efficiently. It was a killing machine, and no doubt that he was out here killing people, but he wasn't torturing them. He wasn't giving them Alzheimer's disease and letting them rot in a vegetable state or die slowly like Lou Gehrig's disease over 10 or 15 years, not that I ever heard of. And yet that's precisely what these animals are doing at the Food and Drug Administration and in the Senate and House of Representatives and in the White House of the United States. I mean, I used the word animal. Can you describe that kind of wickedness in a better term than savage animal? Totally devoid of morals or conscience. I'm a scientist. I got to tell you that I'm working on a very important experiment right now. I'm an evolutionary scientist. I'm trying to prove the theory of evolution. And I have a thing here called a have a heart trap. It's a cage. It's a box, and it's a wire cage. And you put bait in there, and there's a pedal, and an animal, a coon, goes into the have a heart trap. And he steps on the pedal trying to get the food, and it trips the latch, and the cage door slams shut and traps him in the cage. And the reason that they have these kinds of traps is so that you don't hurt or harm the animal. Now, ordinary traps, you know, just an ordinary coon trap, it's a god-awful device. I mean, it's two jaws that snap together with a powerful spring and catches the animal by his foot. Sometimes the animal will chew his foot off to get away. I got to say, you know, it's painful. It's I had one out here. I caught a coon one time by the arm, by the front paw. And when I saw what that trap did to that coon, it just turned my stomach. I was just revulsed by it. And I'm an old farm boy, and I don't have any problem shooting a cow, you know, and cutting her up and bringing her in the house and frying her up and eating her. But when I saw that coon in that trap, I said, you know, I don't want to do that anymore. Now, I'm not saying that you trappers out there ought to change your trap line to a have-a-heart trap. I mean, you know, business is business. I hear you. But personally, I was kind of revolted by it. So I got these have-a-heart traps. And when I catch a coon now, I take him down to a water trough, and I drop him in, and I drown him. I drown him. And, you know, how long does it take you to drown? Well, you know, maybe 5 minutes. Now, I'm sure that during that 5 minutes, that's not a very pleasant way to die, and I consider that. But I want to kill this coon. I want him out of my chickens and out of my life. And so I go ahead and drown them. But I don't torture them to death. I mean, I don't stick them in a barrel, you know, and then light off a fire and burn them up. I'm not sitting here dreaming up ways to inflict pain upon a dumb animal. I just I don't have that in me. I'm not quite designed that way yet. But these people don't have any remorse at all about the way they kill multiple millions of Americans every year. I mean, they're killing people by the millions. And they do it every single year, and they do it for decade and decade and decade and, you know, just this goes on for, it's been going on now with just this particular item here since the 1940s. And they've known about this since 1957, and they got absolute documentation by 1968. By 1988, I mean, it was out there slapping them up in the face. By 1997, they had documentation and documentation on the footnotes. It's still in the food supply, and it's not coming out. That's the tragic part. It isn't that the FDA, Congress, and the president are slow. I mean, they ain't even running. You talk about slow as molasses in January, boys and girls, I'm telling you, hey, this stuff ain't even flowing at any speed. So if anything's going to be done, you're going to do it. Now, I got to give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling site on our website. And the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can also be accessed through the webpage. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. So be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out so freely do not mean that the authors and publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to endorse and recommend the Law Hour and Editorial Review. That's a one-way street here. And that's because most of the authors and publications cite it here on the Law Hour. They may be hostile, secular, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans with their own axes to grind. And their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But keep in mind that these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or management or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, we invite you to go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct, and the number is 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about excitotoxins, and I mentioned to you before I gave you the break here that I'm a scientist, and I'm doing some very extensive research work in evolution. And I do it as a result of my Have a Heart traps. Because long ago and far away, as evolution has developed, you know, over the eons and centuries and time, animals change because of the need to change because of a change in their environment. Well, here on the Gordon Farm, there's a change in the environment of the coon population who enter our Have a Heart traps. They become trapped in the trap, and they have a need to evolve some specialized equipment in order to survive, because these coons here are being caught in a trap and then dropped into a water trough. And they either need to evolve gill slits so that they can breathe underwater in the Have a Heart trap, or they need to develop trunk-like appendages on their noses, like an elephant, so that they can stick it up through the wire mesh in the trap up to the surface of the water so that they can breathe underwater. Or perhaps they need to evolve strong teeth to tear the wire mesh open so that they can escape. Now, so far, I've been doing this for 25 years, and we have had no success with our evolutionary experiments, but we have high hopes for the future. We know that it takes a long time for evolution to occur, so be patient. And as our coon population slowly evolves a mechanism by which they can survive this new hazard to their lives, which is the Have a Heart trap, I will keep you fully informed. Now, in 1968, Dr. Olney, working out of the Department of Psychiatry at the Washington University in St. Louis, repeated Dr. Lucas and Newhouse's experiment using the same kind of animals and the same doses of MSG. Now, what Dr. Olney found was even more shocking. He discovered that not only did MSG cause severe damage to the neurons in the retina of the eye, but that it also caused widespread destruction of neurons in the hypothalamus and other areas of the brain adjacent to the ventricular system called the circumventricular organs. And I think that means your heart and circulatory system. Again, this damage was more severe in the immature or newborn animals. So he hypothesized that this area of the brain was affected most because it did not have a blood-brain barrier, a system to protect it from toxic substances circulating in the blood. Now, despite the fact that his findings were confirmed in a number of animal studies using a wide variety of species, few paid attention to this critical discovery. The medical journals read by most practicing doctors, especially those caring for newborn babies, neglected to publish his findings. Private practicing physicians at the time of this discovery rarely read the basic science research literature and were therefore unaware of the immediate dangers to their patients, especially to newborns and developing babies. So without a public or professional outcry, the food industry continued to add more and more monosodium glutamate and hydrolyzed vegetable protein to their food products. And at the time of Dr. Olney's report, even baby foods contained relatively large doses of MSG. Mothers, unaware of the danger to their children, were delighted to see their little ones eating so well. Because MSG and hydrolyzed protein are such powerful taste enhancers, they make most foods, even the bland ones, taste scrumptious. So the discovery by Dr. Olney was particularly important because the hypothalamus plays such an important role in controlling so many areas of our bodies. This little piece of the brain, which is no larger than the fingernail of your little finger, controls a multitude of systems, regulating growth, the onset of puberty, most of the endocrine glands, appetite, sleep cycles, and waking patterns, the biological clock, and even consciousness itself. Dr. Olney's studies on various species of test animals disclosed that MSG, when fed in doses similar to those found in human diets, destroys hypothalamic neurons. This type of hypothalamic damage produces a particular syndrome in animals, which causes them to be short in stature, obese, and to have reproductive problems. Later experiments demonstrated that MSG could cause the hypothalamus to secrete excessive amounts of reproductive hormone called, let's try this one, luteinizing, L-U-T-E-I-N-I-Z-I-N-G, luteinizing hormone, which is associated with an early onset of puberty. Now, many of these endocrine effects did not appear until the animal was much older, and this will be covered in greater detail in Chapter 4. Now, recognizing the immediate danger to the public, especially to the newborn child, Dr. Olney and others testified before Congress concerning these dangers. As a result of their vigilance, MSG was voluntarily removed from baby foods in 1969. Now, the food industry voluntarily took the MSG out of the baby food in 1969. Well, that's a pretty sensitive subject. If you're killing, you know, your grandma and grandpa, that's bad. But if you're killing babies, that's even worse. So to their credit, the food industry took it out of the baby food. Let me pause here for a moment. If the food industry took it out of the baby food in 1969, recognizing that it was deleterious to babies and to developing brains, why would you leave it in the general food supply and feed it to adults? And if I had arsenic and I was putting it in your food, and I said, well, let's take it out of the baby food because this arsenic kills babies faster than it kills adults, shouldn't I also take it out of the adult food? Now, if this stuff is good for adults, then it ought to be just as good for babies. Now, politically, it's suicide to leave it in the baby food. But, you know, you can poison adults and they don't seem to get too excited about that. Now, I'm giving you a report here. And I asked you the question earlier. I said, do you do business with the mafia? And you got really righteous and indignant, and you said, of course not, they're criminals. And I'm asking you now, well, then why in the hell would you do business with government? No, you have a choice to make here. And they don't deny it. They come right out and say, well, we're going to voluntarily take it out of your baby food. They did it early on in 1969. Let's see, 79, 89, 99, 109. You know, in two more years, it'll be 40 years. You know, we're pushing 40 years that these people have known about the toxic effects of this product called MSG. And over that 40 years, this word has gotten out to the general public that MSG isn't good for you. You might not have known that MSG was this bad, but you've heard something about MSG. You read about it in Reader's Digest. You saw an article about it in Time Magazine, or you read it in a newspaper. You know, somebody told you. It doesn't register, you know, when that happens, but you heard a little something about it. And then you sit back and you say, well, if it's bad, then surely, you know, somebody's going to do something about this. I mean, the FDA, the Congress. Hell, the FDA and the Congress are fully aware of this. This Dr. Olney went and testified. Now, no one had warned pregnant women of the danger to their developing babies caused by the MSG found within their own food. This danger would exist if the glutamate from the mother's blood entered the blood of their unborn baby. In 1974, Dr. Olney demonstrated that MSG, when fed to pregnant rhesus monkeys, would cause brain damage to their offspring. Other researchers found similar results when pregnant rats were fed MSG. Yet millions of pregnant women continued to eat foods laced with MSG and other equally potent excitotoxins, while the FDA remained silent. The gynecologists and pediatricians were not told to warn their patients of this real danger. After birth and following weaning from bottle to breast milk, most mothers begin feeding their babies food from the table. These foods frequently contain large amounts of MSG, hydrolyzed vegetable protein, and Dr. Olney found that these children were receiving doses of MSG from the table food that equaled the dose used experimentally to produce severe brain cell destruction in their animal experiments. By what I mean, proportionally equal. Often critics of this observation claim that humans rarely receive such high doses. Well, that's a lie. It's not true. And incredibly, humans develop higher blood levels of glutamate following ingestion of MSG than does any other animal species. That was what Dr. Olney noted. All right, so now you got a chimpanzee over here. This chimpanzee weighs 30, 40 pounds, something like that, maybe 50. Well, you got children over here, you know, and they weigh 30, 40, 50 pounds, and then you're feeding them off the table, and they're getting more MSG than we were feeding to the monkeys to cause these damages in the primates, and humans are more susceptible to the toxic effects of the MSG than are the animals. Does the FDA know that? Well, of course they do. All of this has been reported. They've got file cabinets full of reports that would, you know, far exceed anything that's written in this book. And yet they continue to allow the food manufacturers. Now, the food manufacturers, remember, took the MSG out of the baby food. Now, don't you think that we ought to tell pregnant women that they ought not to eat it because it'll go right through the placenta and into the baby brain developing in their wombs? You know, common sense. You know, I'm not too smart, but, you know, I'm not brain dead yet. I may be by the time this MSG gets through with me, but it didn't happen quite yet. So if you think that writing letters to the Food and Drug Administration or writing letters to your senators and representatives is going to solve your problem, I think that you have got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy again. I mean, there's a solution to the problem, and it devolves upon you. You can solve the problem for you. I can't. I'm not here to rail on you and get you to get evangelistic zeal and run out here and start marching, you know, for the anti-MSG forces. That's I wouldn't waste my time doing that. But you can educate yourself, you know, with a little bit of effort here. It won't take you very long. So this book is about 300 pages. It's written in layman's language. It's a warning to lay people. Dr. Blaylock and Dr. Olney, who have pioneered the research, and both of them are neurosurgeons. Both of them are the doctor. You know, when you've got Alzheimer's, this is the doctor you go to. This is a neurospecialist, a brain specialist. And these two doctors say, okay, we've got all these guys coming in here, and we're trying to figure out what's causing it, and they're telling you, MSG. You want to know why your kid's dumb and can't learn? MSG. Want to know why your kid's got ADD, bounces off the wall and off the ceilings? He's getting MSG. And in addition to that, it's carcinogenic, and it causes cancer. Do you want to know why you got cancer, ladies? MSG. Now, you can't dogmatically say that this guy got Alzheimer's because he ate MSG. You know, it could be that a guy could get Alzheimer's without eating any MSG. Here's what they came up with. They said, well, it sure as hell exacerbates the problem. I mean, you already got your house on fire. Throwing 5 gallons of gasoline on the flames ain't going to help things none. A little water might help it some, but gasoline ain't going to help it none. So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, the amount of MSG in a single bowl of commercially available soup is probably enough to cause blood glutamate levels to rise higher in the human child than levels that predictably cause brain damage in immature animal subjects. One bowl of soup, you know, one bowl of Campbell's soup on a cold, rainy day fed to your six-year-old kid is more MSG than is fed to a primate of equal weight and causes brain damage in the primate. Now, you know, if you want to keep feeding your kid Campbell's tomato soup on a cold, snowy day, you know, it's your choice. Get after it. But I would say that if you did over here, it might not be as malicious as the FDA or the Senate or the House or the President, but it's certainly callous, wouldn't you agree? It's I don't give a damn, it's inconvenient, and so here, kid, I'm not going to take the time to protect you from this poison. Not out of my busy schedule. You know, it's up to you to look out for yourself, kid. When adult humans are fed 100 to 150 milligrams per kilogram of body weight of MSG, their blood levels rise 20 times higher than normal as compared to a fourfold rise seen in experimental mice fed a comparable dose. Monkeys develop a zero-fold rise in blood glutamate after similar doses of glutamate. We know that children are frequently exposed to two doses of MSG and other related excitotoxins in their food in extremely high doses. But the fact that humans concentrate glutamate in their blood to a greater degree than other animal species means that the parts of the human infant's brain that are not protected by the blood-brain barrier is exposed to even higher doses following MSG or hydrolyzed vegetable protein ingestion than is used experimentally to produce brain damage in animals. So what that paragraph is telling us is that when you're feeding this to your kid, you're giving him higher doses than we would to animals. We produced brain damage in the animals. There's every reason to believe we're causing brain damage in your kid, in your child. Now, this brain damage is the killing. It's the destruction of brain cells. Now, you know, your brain probably has a billion, 5, 10, I don't know how many cells are in there, but it's got billions of cells. And it probably kills 50 or 75 or 100 or 200 or 500 brain cells. Now, you've got to do that a lot of times, but, you know, over a lot of years, you know, you keep eating that Campbell's soup over a lot of years, eating a lot of this MSG, and pretty soon it starts adding up, and then there's an effect that comes from that. And so many people are just spending, you know, tons of money and spending a lot of their time. I would suggest to you that the next time you go to feed your kid a bowl of soup, or the next time you're shopping in the grocery store, I would submit to you that it takes less time to read the label and to avoid the MSG than it takes to go to the drugstore to get the prescription drugs for your kid, you know, the Ritalin or something like that. You know, the truth of the matter is it's inconvenient to read labels and to avoid these poisons, but in the long run it takes less time to avoid the poison than it does to cure it after the fact, and it costs a hell of a lot less. You're not really saving any time, and you're not doing yourself any favor by poisoning your children or poisoning your family. Because your trips to the drugstore and to the doctors and the long-term care for Alzheimer's and the money that you have to spend taking care of grandma and grandpa in the rest home is a hell of a lot more expensive and time-consuming than reading the labels. And if you think this book is too expensive at $20, you wait until you take on somebody with Alzheimer's and it's costing you 100 grand a year to take care of them. Now, of course, you won't be spending that 100 grand a year. You'll put them in some public institution and the taxpayers will pay it. But you're paying it. You're paying your share of it, just like all the rest of us. higher prices and higher taxes. Now, when my own children were small toddlers, my wife and I were amazed at how much they loved a special canned pasta dish called ABCs and 123s by Chef Boyardee. These are little pasta alphabet letters and numbers in a mixture of tomato sauce. Now, our children wanted it for every meal. Once I became aware of the danger of MSG, I discovered that this delicious meal in a can contained both MSG and hydrolyzed vegetable protein. Well, no wonder they loved it. So we began to examine our children's food, and we discovered that many foods specifically advertised for children contained large doses of such excitotoxin taste enhancers. Now, Dr. Olney adroitly pointed out the irony of this food industry practice. Thus, today we're witnessing an ironic situation. While knowledgeable neuroscientists are fervently attempting to develop methods for protecting the CNS brain neurons against neurotoxic potential of endogenous glutamate, the aspartate, other elements of society are vigorously promoting the unlimited use of this exogenous glue and asp as food additives. And so here you've got this crazy. You got government that is supporting science and scientists who come up with the answers. Oh my God, this stuff is killing you. And then you've got the pharmaceuticals and the food industry going to the Congress and saying, hey, listen, we want more of it and an unlimited supply. Furthermore, we don't want to label it either. They did that with the GMOs. The Congress has not required the food companies to label the GMOs that are going into your food. And they would love to get this label telling you what's in there out of there totally. There's just so many of us, though, that insist on these labels that they haven't been able to accomplish that yet. Okay, I'm about out of time, kids. We're going to have to leave it right here. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. So let me give you a reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night.